Hey guys, it's Andrew here, and welcome to the E-Commerce Fuel Podcast, the show dedicated to helping seven-figure plus owners build incredible businesses and amazing lives. And today on the show, joined by Will Critcher, who's the director of e-commerce for Death Wish Coffee. And Will was someone who applied for and joined the forum. I had heard of the brand and started investigating, and I just thought, you know, this is a cool brand. They've done some really cool stuff with e-commerce, and I'd love to just chat with Will and get a sense of what they're doing and how they're thinking about things. And we talk about the brand, the story. We talk about how their coffee is enjoyed by astronauts, talk about how they're thinking about email newsletters differently and some of the things that they've done to actually improve the results they've seen with them and the brand in general. So yeah, fun discussion. Hope you enjoy it. And Will's got a lot of insights to share. Before we jump in, a big thank you going out to our friends at Klaviyo for making the show possible. Klaviyo, powering over 50,000 merchants' email and SMS marketing platforms and backends. Definitely by far the most popular email marketing tool that's used by members of our private community, our vetted community of seven-figure plus store owners. And for good reason, their marketing automation flow and their triggered email series are second to none in terms of how easy it is to set them up, how detailed you can get with the types of flows, whether it's thanking customers who've purchased lots of times from you, whether it's segmenting and taking extra special care of customers who have higher than likelihood of being a high lifetime value customer based on Klaviyo's unique algorithms, whether it's just following up with upsells for items that people have purchased but haven't gotten the accessories for. It can take your email marketing and your marketing in general to another level. So if that sounds interesting and you're not using them and you want to see what's really possible, you can get started for free with a test drive at klaviyo.com/ECF. That's klaviyo.com/ECF. All right, let's jump into Death Wish Coffee with Will. Will, so in prepping for this podcast, I was looking at all the cool kind of funny guerrilla marketing style stuff that you and the brand have done. And one came to the surface, pretty impressive. Tell me about the International Space Station and how you've got astronauts drinking your guys' coffee. Because that's not a claim that I think many brands can make.
Yeah, you know, I don't even know how actually we originally made the connection to, there's an astronaut named Nicole Scott that we have a pretty good relationship with. And I'm not sure what created that relationship in the first place. But we presented the opportunity to send our coffee to space in 2018. And so naturally we said, hell yeah. And we supplied them, you know, with the coffee and they went up. And then we just most recently went up, our coffee went up to ISS as a part of a science experiment ran by the iLead School and DreamUp, where they were testing bacteria that's created from coffee.
That's cool. It seems like if you were NASA, you wouldn't have to pay for anything. You could just reach out and say, hey, we're NASA. Do you want to be able to say that your stuff was in space? Great. Send us a free package. And they'd probably, yeah. I mean, astronauts probably eat better than anybody else.
Yeah, you would think so. You would think so. You'd be crazy to say no from a company standpoint, a brand standpoint.
Yeah. And you guys have NASCAR reps as well too, right? Like you've got some cool influencers / spokespeople / your stuff is in space. And your brand, like the Death Wish Coffee brand is it's definitely edgy. It's very interesting and unique. How much of that is coincidence, or are you guys really good, kind of like a la Richard Branson, at going out and creating these kind of very interesting PR stunts / relationships? Is that something you guys actively see, do and are really good at, or is it just the ones that I am mentioning has happened to come up by coincidence?
I think it's the ones that you're mentioning happen to be the ones that stand out. I think I would love to say that we're really great at it, but I think we're really good at going into things head first and trying. You know, I don't think we look at things. You know, we're not too big to say like, oh, we can't fail by, making a partnership with any influencer, but we also can't assume that everything is worth getting involved in and getting invested into. With NASCAR, honestly, the reasoning for NASCAR is Mike Brown, the CEO, is a diehard NASCAR fan. So we currently sponsor Anthony Alfredo and John Hunter Nemechek. We have both of the cars. We wrap both the cars. We supply them with both their fire suits and their helmets as well. But I think when it comes to the edginess aspect of it, if you look at our social media and any of our memes, I mean, it's really kind of how everybody just talks in general internally. So I think, somehow we haven't offended too many people, which is good. You know, we're all incredibly nice people, for the most part. But yeah, I think we've had a lot of great luck getting good relationships with, larger other organizations and professionals.
Yeah. And we're going to talk about a bunch of different marketing things and So people understand where the brand is coming from, because that'll impact obviously how you do your marketing. How would you, for someone who's never, maybe not familiar with the brand, how do you define or how do you describe Death Wish Coffee to someone and kind of the brand feeling and personality, what you guys stand for someone who doesn't know?
Yeah, that's a really good question. You know, we're the world's strongest coffee. We were founded as the world's strongest coffee because of a need. So the CEO, Mike Brown, he used to own a small coffee shop called Saratoga Coffee Traders. And he just had customers come in every day, just asking him like, hey man, what's the strongest cup of coffee you got? What's the strongest one? And he just realized like, wow, there's a huge opportunity here. So he went out and just inevitably created the world's strongest coffee. The sentiment behind our brand, you know, we always speak from an eye-centric point of view. You know, it doesn't matter if it's, you know, via email or via, you know, through social media or the partnerships that we have. You know, we're just trying to fuel people's passion. As cliche as it is, it's really true to what that, you know, to how we feel about things. You know, we really do care about our customers. I would almost say to a fault sometimes in the sense of how we try to scale the business. But ultimately, it's, you know, we just really try to, you know, provide the world's strongest coffee. It's an organic coffee. We source it through fair trade. You know, we do everything as ethical as possible. And we just try to provide, you know, coffee is the second most consumed non-alcoholic beverage on earth. And so I think, you know, for us to be in a market of differentiation, which I think is arguably the greatest competitive strategy you have, you know, we just really focus on being different, but, you know, uniquely and ironically ourselves at the same time, which I think everybody can relate to. You know, the best part of waking up isn't waking up, it's drinking coffee.
Yeah. And when I said edgy, I didn't mean that in any kind of way as a hit, but when I looked at your Instagram and stuff like that, like it's very, correct me if I'm wrong, but kind of a very tongue-in-cheek, kind of playful image, very much, you know, of yeah, exactly like you said, like mornings are rough until you get, you know, hit the good stuff, being the coffee. Just like it's a fun, humorous, edgy, in a kind of just, you know, yeah, self-deprecating and kind of very realistic kind of way.
Yeah, you nailed it. You nailed it.
Yeah, it's a great brand. I love the way you've set it up. So let's talk about your newsletter, because I was kind of digging in and you guys have built up a pretty meaningful newsletter, you know, in the hundreds of thousands. You've made some changes that have grown it pretty significantly recently. Maybe before you get into the changes that you made and how that impacted the growth, what was the legacy way you were doing it? What were you doing before that wasn't working as well as you know, the new and improved version?
Yeah. So the way our newsletter went out historically, I think probably up until about Q4 of 2018, we would send out whenever we came out with a product, we pretty much release a product every single week, whether it's merch or a new mug or something of that nature. We would lead in the email where we would have above the fold, you would have the product or the deal that we were pushing. And then beneath the fold, they would have two pieces of high performing content or content related to whatever that product is. And then beneath that was the podcast. And so when I first started with Death Wish, I looked at this and I was like, well, there's a huge opportunity for just to separate these two, like, you know, in the sense of, you know, how can we remove this content that's clearly, you know, has proof positive results, you know, based upon just the social engagement and just our organic traffic that we're acquiring from these blogs. So we just pulled everything from that newsletter and then, or that we'll say that sales email really, because that was the, you know, the success metric was sales. So we pulled everything from that and put it into a newsletter and then called it the Scoop, which is, again, it's a 100% content-based email. We don't link to any product detail pages. We play a lot of fun games in there. We actually link to other people's businesses sometimes, and we get really silly and weird in there. You know, we talk about our product releases for the month, but that's the most, I think, product. Yeah, that's really the only thing in the content that we do related to product.
So the big thing, you really took one email that had sales promotions and copy, or excuse me, sales promotions and content, and split those up into two emails a week, just purely focused on sales and purely focused on the copy. And why do you think that made such a big difference? And how much of a difference did it make in terms of, you know, actual sales moving the needle in terms of percent of a bump you saw from email?
So why I think it made such a big difference is ever since I was in college, I've always followed a psychologist named Kurt Lewin, and he talks about changing human behavior. And there's two ways. It's either applying pressure, so that's incentivization, threats, or arguments, or you could look at it a very distinctive way, and that's by removing obstacles. And so essentially, if the sales email, anything that's not contributing to the goal, which would be sales, remove the obstacles. So I looked at it more of a click share. So, you know, what are people also clicking other than the thing that we want them to click? And so by pulling everything out, it provides more real estate to market and sell the product inside of that email without providing any distraction. What that translated to on a business sense was, I think, right, last time I did an audit of it, we were about 40% per email more in revenue. And even similar, like whether it's t-shirts or coffee or whatever that might be. By pulling all of that content and putting it into the newsletter, we were able to kind of teach our audience, you know, like, hey, on Thursdays, now it's Fridays, but on Fridays, they know that what they're getting is a sales email, that they know that they're looking, you know, where we're trying to convince them or show them why they should buy something. And on Monday, we're just looking to provide a bunch of death wish shenanigans. And so therefore, everybody knows what they're going to get when they open the scoop on a Monday. And everybody knows, you know, that they're going to be pitched on a Friday. Yeah, it's worked out really, really well.
Do you, when you did that, did you keep it the same sender? Like you called the scoop, and I think the scoop is probably, I'm guessing, your one for the content. Did you keep it the same sender and it just comes from the same sender name and email address on both days? Or did you split it up into like two separate identities for those different emails and newsletter campaigns?
It comes from the same sender name. And it comes, we were through shared IP, but now it's all dedicated, but that's, I guess, an irrelevant part. But yeah, it does come from the same sender. It comes from Deathwish. And I think it's hey at Deathwish Coffee is the sending name.
And did you see a huge drop in the open rates for the sales pitch emails versus the content emails, or does it stay pretty, you know, pretty similar across?
Because of the segmentation that we do on the sales emails, I would say it certainly increased. So our subscribers, our email subscribers, our eligible email subscribers sits around 650,000. We don't send, obviously, I think it's really reckless to just send a, you know, product email to every person in there. So we do segment that out. We average probably about a 30 to 40% open rate on sales emails. And then the content, the scoop, that sits probably around, I would say, a 27 to a 32% open rate.
So you're getting higher open rates on your sales emails versus your content email.
Yeah. It's a little, I can't say it's a bad thing. It is a little frustrating to some extent, just because I believe so much in newsletters as a whole. I think we still got a lot to learn and grow from that, but yeah.
I think most people would be pretty stoked about that. That's a good problem to have.
Yeah, our customers, like the people who do open, obviously the Friday sales emails, they're, a lot of them are fanatics, so they love to see what we have released, especially with COVID and, you know, the supply chain has just been, you know, it's really dampened our ability to release new things. So having the opportunity to, especially now, like whenever we send them something that we're releasing, they're like, we get open rates through the roof.
Yeah. You talked about how, I don't know if you do this with a copy email, but at least with the sales email or the content email, rather. The sales emails, you're segmenting that of that, you know, let's say 650K, you're sent to, I don't know, a third or half or whatever it is. How are you segmenting that? Is it just recency of purchase? Is it engagement on the email list? Because I'm sure you've got some kind of campaign where if people aren't engaged, you wean them off and unsubscribe them. But how are you, even apart from that, sub-selecting into who you're sending those weekly sales emails to? What are the criteria for that?
Yeah, so there's a few. Google Gmail essentially classifies as an engaged subscriber is a 90-day window. So I looked at that as saying, okay, what if, you know, if Google is defining somebody that's in a 90-day window as an engaged subscriber, I personally as an end user, as a consumer, you know, if I don't read an email 75 days ago from a certain brand, the likelihood that I'm going to read it 76 days is unlikely. So I broke that engaged group down to three tiers. So tier one, two, and three. Tier one, I believe, is they have to open or click greater than twice in less than a 21-day window. And then it just kind of scales down from 22 to 60, 61 to 90 days. And then the goal from there is to essentially just push as many people into tier one as possible. And so to define how we do the engagement, it is based upon email engagement. It's not so much based upon purchase, unless we're sending a reminder email. So if we send an email to, let's say, the entire engage list at 10 o'clock in the morning, and we get, say, 5,000 people open and click it, but they haven't made a purchase in 24 hours, then we'll send to them specifically because they've clicked inside of that. They've clicked in the email that's brought them to that product detail page. And so we'll send them a reminder at the end of the day to kind of, you know, reactivate them. But I say that's probably the shortest way on how we segment based upon engagement, email engagement.
Totally makes sense. I was on your homepage and kind of moving a little bit into opt-in style stuff. You have a random gift code, big red, this little box that stands out. If you go to deathwishcoffee.com, you'll see what I'm talking about. If you click it, it pops up a fairly, you know, opt-in. It says, who doesn't like free cash discount, kind of your standard discount for getting some cash for a discount for purchasing. And then you've got three little check marks on what type of coffee you buy, whole bean, ground, or K-cup. Is this the random gift code? I thought was interesting because I haven't seen that before. Was that something you've tested, or was it something that, kind of like me, just the curiosity factor kind of kicks in where people are like, what's this random gift code thing? And then they click it. And did you test that, or how did that, what's the backstory behind that? Because I thought it was interesting.
Yeah. So random gift code, actually, it used to be a campaign initiative. So we would send it out. It existed before I got here. And so it was a, you know, like once every 6 months, we would just take the entire list of subscribers that we have. We'd break them out into, you know, four or five random groups. Actually, no, I'm sorry. It was much higher than that. It was like 18 groups. And we would create, we'll just say 18 different codes. We would just send everybody an email and they would just randomly either get a, you know, an average coupon value, or they'd get an extremely high coupon value. When we were discussing, you know, what, you know, different lead gen, you know, options do we have that can kind of, you know, incentivize people to join our list that have not subscribed in the past, we decided to, like, well, what if we take the RGC, so we call it RGC internally, and switch it from a campaign and just create as a welcome series, there's an intro to get people to sign up. So when users sign up, they then obviously select, I think it's whole bean, you said whole bean, ground, or K-cup. That's actually irrelevant to the RGC specifically. We use that later on for our coffee promos and things like that. But so once they sign up, they fall into six different variants weighted between $2 and $10 coupon. So we just provide a dollar coupon, not a percentage off. We've been running that since, I think, October. And I couldn't tell you the most recent numbers, but I would say it's probably somewhere around 40,000 new subscribers. We actually, the last time I looked into it, which is about 2 months ago, we had a higher than a 100% conversion rate on anybody who clicked in the email for our $4 and $6. And it was higher than 100% only because they became repeat purchasers. I think the open rate of that flow is, I think it's somewhere around like 80%. It's pretty nuts.
That's crazy. And what do you use to generate those random gift cards or the amount? Like, what are you using on the back end to manage all this?
Just Klaviyo. Yeah, we just provide dynamic codes through Klaviyo.
Hey, it's Andrew here. Quick little sidebar. If you go to like a birthday party for your kids, or a happy hour, or just any random group setting, and people ask you, hey, what do you do? If you're like me, you just say, oh, I'm in e-commerce. And 99% of the time, people say, oh, okay, that's interesting. And change the topic, talk about something else, or just walk away because they have no idea what it is you really do. And you probably don't want to explain to them in depth, which is why you should join us inside the e-commerce field private community. Because in a world that has no idea what you are dealing with on a daily basis, dealing with Amazon suspensions, dealing with inventory shortages from China, dealing with HR issues and you know, that hire who didn't work out, and also dealing with those days where you have more orders than you can know what to do with, there are 1,100 people who know exactly the kind of life you're living. Not only that, not only can they empathize, but they can provide solutions, help give you advice, give you feedback on the myriad of issues and problems and good opportunities you have in your business. It's a real sounding board of peers because we vet our members to make sure everyone is again, has deep industry experience or is running a seven-figure business. So if that sounds interesting to you, if you'd love to have people get you and have solutions to your problems in one place, and on top of that, be able to make some pretty cool friends along the way, check us out. You can learn more about our community for members at ecommercefuel.com. All right, back to the discussion. I'd love to talk a little bit about Amazon and some of your Amazon sales. And you took a product and were able to get it to the number 5 position on Amazon in all of grocery. And I'd love to hear you talk about how you did that. And in reading some of your stuff, you said the first part of that was you took into account kind of the basic obvious customer behavior when visiting Amazon. So can you talk a little bit about that, like the beginning of that, those optimization steps and that optimization process that led to that outcome? What was the empathy you had or the understanding you had that helped you start that process from a customer's behavioral standpoint?
Yeah. So, well, the first behavioral, I think, would definitely be Prime, you know, making sure that you're FBA. So getting to that, you know, having that fulfillment chain set up obviously was critical to, you know, critical in helping us get to the point of, you know, becoming a top seller. From that standpoint, I think McKinley put out a study like about a year and a half ago, and it had to do with brand loyalists. And it talked about if you had 100, I think it was out of, and I'm oversimplifying their results, but they're saying if you had 100 brand loyalists to, let's say, Death Wish Coffee, when they hit Amazon.com, and let's just say they don't type in Death Wish Coffee, they just type in coffee, and these are like true diehard brand loyalists. There's a, for 85, or it was 85 or 73% of those people will at least consider, you know, even if they don't click it, 73 to 85% will consider some of the other results that they see on that search result page for Amazon. So considering that aspect of it, that obviously, you know, how can we help, you know, limit the loss of anybody who might want to look at some of our competitors like Black Rifle or Dunkin' or Starbucks. So that comes into the paid side of things, but drilling down through to the PDP, the product detail page, you know, just kind of, you know, reviews are incredibly important and incredibly critical to any ASIN success. So, you know, we've done really, really well in that department. Beyond just that, you know, once you scroll down, if you're trying to, you know, take into consideration, you know, understanding more of the origin about the product or the company, you know, right beneath that, you've got sponsored products or products similar to. So that's another opportunity where they're at least going to be considering, you know, potentially a competitor. So what can we do to protect our own brand in that sense? And then obviously, as you go down through that and you see the reviews and whatnot, that's where we want to make sure, like from a top to bottom, we're really covering our bases and doing it the right way. But then, you know, again, if you consider that somebody who's visiting our page or our product, what can we do to go after some of our competitors, customers, to show them and, you know, bring them to the dark side? Recently, I actually did run into a supply chain issue through COVID, but it was completely our own fault, which was kind of funny. It started with Amazon, but Amazon suppressed 12 of our products. And I'm not sure how familiar you are with Amazon, but it's, you know, when your product's suppressed, you know, they say, you know, click this link to find out why. And the link is so generic and there's no real information there. My understanding was like, oh, maybe it's because, you know, COVID is going on and we have death in our title. But again, we have a trademark that they have the PDF for, blah, 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 blah. So it took a really, really long time to get that all sorted out. I think we the 12, and these are like our staple products, like our OG bag of, you know, 1 pound ground, 2 pound ground, whole beans, so on and so forth, our death cups, everything. And so I think they were, all 12 products were suppressed for 17 days, but because I was so focused on trying to get them not suppressed, we actually forgot to manage the inventory side of things, because obviously amidst COVID and Shopify and everything else that's going on, we ended up having a supply chain issue. And then by the time we recognized it, that's when Amazon was being more restrictive as to the essentials that they were allowing in. And there's a, you know, huge time delay issue with Amazon and getting products in there, you know, just like having trucks delivered and scheduled and whatnot. But finally got that resolved. I feel like it was 3 months ago. Actually,
what was the issue? Why did it get suppressed? Why did all your top sellers get slapped?
USDA certified was, it was a claim that they, essentially it was a claim, which was also not accurate. It's not a claim, it's a fact. Like, it's on the bag for us. So these products in the title, they had USDA certified organic. And so we had to remove USDA certified from it. We just had to keep, we were only allowed to use organic in the title.
And how did that process go for you guys? Because Amazon's not exactly known as being the company you can pick up the phone and talk to a helpful, you know, representative. So, I mean, any tips for people? I guess two parts to that question is how were you able to finally get through to them? And any tips for people who are trying to, you know, talk to the inner workings of the beast and get a message through effectively if someone else has this issue?
Yeah. Yes. Honestly, we used to have a rep when I first started here. We had a rep for a little while, and then we decided that we weren't getting really much value out of it, especially considering our product's ranking. So we decided, you know, we opted to not pay for that rep. I think if we would have had that rep during the time of these suppressed products, she probably would have helped us resolve this issue pretty, I would like to think, pretty quickly.
I mean, this is an opt-in. How much do you have to pay for? Amazon makes you pay for a rep. It's not an insignificant amount of money.
No, I think, I mean, I've heard companies larger than us, brands larger than us that have to pay the same amount. So I would imagine it's probably for smaller, but it was 60 grand for a year.
Did you say 16 or 60?
60,000. But so the solution at the end of the day, I mean, I wish I had better advice. Essentially, it was just contacting their seller support through Seller Central. And then, you know, Amazon, it's very effective for them, but very, very unfortunate for sellers. It's just, they're so compartmentalized. You know, even if you know, we have an ad rep that, you know, we work through OTT or DSP and stuff like that, and is of literally no help at all. So the only way we could really get through it was just contacting seller support. We would talk to someone who was like, I see that the product is suppressed. Did you go to this link? I'm like, yes, I did. And then they would say, did you make, you know, the change is probably because of death, for instance. So we would make that change and modification, but we don't want to change everything. We just want to try it on a couple and see if it works. And then it was a, you know, wait 24 hours, call back the next day if you don't see it, and we'll try it. Literally, that's what it was. It was just trying it. And then finally, I had someone tag teaming this with me. We both at the same, around like the same hour of time frame, both got the exact same information back from two different reps saying it's because of the USDA certified. So we're like, maybe that's it. We switched it. And then the next day, everything just magically popped back up on Amazon.
But the reps, they didn't know. It took you, what it sounds like, multiple, if not half a dozen calls just to, there was no clarity.
Especially because I have people to answer to, you know, fortunately I had really good resources that could help verify, like, hey, look, these are honestly the conversations that we're having with them. And they're just essentially just directing us to a link, you know, help doc to say, you know, it's probably issue 1, 2, or 3. And I mean, it got to the point where I was assuming maybe it was some anti-competitive behavior, because I've definitely heard of that situation going on where people have paid Amazon employees to modify product detail pages that then violate Amazon's terms of services. So, I mean, it was honestly searching for a needle in a haystack. And then just to come to find out, it had nothing to do with death. It had nothing to do with our product detail pages. It had to do with a USDA certified, which has been there for forever. It was a really good time.
I bet. Everyone else thinks they've had a rough spring. Check them out, deathwishcoffee.com. Incredibly cool brand. If for nothing else, just to check out the brand and the marketing. But if you're a coffee drinker, to pick yourself up some delicious, incredibly strong brew. So deathwishcoffee.com. Well, I'd love to wrap up with just a quick lightning round before we sign off, if you're up for it.
Yeah, let's do it.
What's your favorite piece of e-commerce tech?
It's got to be Klaviyo. I think it's because of the segmentation and just the fact that it's so simple to do and allows us to accomplish, you know, pretty much everything we want to from an email standpoint. I'd have to say Klaviyo.
The least favorite piece of e-commerce tech?
Oh, it's easy. It's Recharge.
Recharge? This is what manages your subscriptions?
Yeah, correct. I can't stand Recharge. It's, I can't say too many nice things about it, honestly. It drives me crazy.
You were headhunted by Death Wish Coffee away from an agency, I think, you ran. What was it, in maybe one sentence, what was it that they offered you or sold you on that convinced you to come on board the Death Wish Coffee train?
The opportunity to, you know, when you are an employee, you've got a collar and a leash, you know, and so the leash, you know, it gets tense, you know, and that's when you know you're going too far. It was made very clear to me that, you know, I'd have the collar and the leash, but there would never be any tension with that leash. And so I think the opportunity to be curious, to try things out, to you know, work with a really incredible company and just scale it as much as possible and be okay if things fail and don't work out. Yeah, I feel like it's just like just being able to be exercise the curiosity of just trying something very, very different from what I was doing with my agency.
What's the most effective marketing strategy that you've used at Death Wish over the last 6 months?
We do a golden ticket whenever we release a mug. So a golden ticket is 2 weeks before we release a mug. We do, if we come up with 5,000 mugs, for instance, we do 25 of them that are of a different glaze. And so how we do that is 2 weeks prior to, it helps us prime for that golden ticket release. So essentially all someone has to do is just place an order. And then when they receive a package, the mug is in there if they win the golden ticket. The mugs sell, it's incredible. They sell for $15,000 to $3,000 on eBay. It's nuts. With COVID happening.
$3,000 for a mug?
Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
So for people, myself included, who don't understand why anyone ever would ever pay close to that for a coffee mug, is it just limited edition Death Wish? You just have rabid fans and you have, and they're kind of collector's items like this baseball cards or what, how, what's the deal?
Yeah, that's exactly it. I think, I mean, it's not just Death Wish fans too. I think a lot of people that are, I think, you know, I don't want to say this in a negative way that, like, you know, coffee snobs, but just people who, you know, find the collectability of mugs. There's a huge, I mean, there's mug hysteria out there. And we, you know, I can't really justify the market. I could just tell you that people, you know, when they sell them, I'm blown away at the cost sometimes that people are able to sell these for. What we did in the last 6 months, you know, just with COVID, is we saw this, you know, increase in bulk buying, you know, like 50 counts, 5 pound bags. You know, everyone was, you know, definitely trying to purchase up on that. And so we thought we would be able to not only help the community, but also kind of hedge that a little bit and kind of reading some of the signals. So we did a golden ticket we had no mug that was going to be released, but we just ended up doing a golden ticket where we just gave away free coffee for a year for 25 people. So setting 25 people up on a free subscription. We spent $0 advertising that. We just sent it through an email twice, actually, because the first email, we had a broken link, an FAQ link. So we had to send it again. And that's where we become a little reckless. We just sent to everybody in our subscribers. So when we resent the email, the subject line for that email was, whoops, we effed up. And then it just had the correct FAQ link. And we cleared $200,000 one day from that.
Interesting. I like it. Kind of the lottery-esque into driving sales. Next lightning round question here. Favorite item you sell on the website? We'll link up to it.
I think our single serve pour overs, they're incredible. They're completely biodegradable. They're perfect for camping, but they're perfect for travel. They're perfect for the house. They're just a little packet of coffee. It's organic ground coffee. You just put it rests over your coffee mug. You pour hot water into it, kind of brews like tea. But we're really excited about it. We just released it a couple of weeks ago. But I honestly think that's probably my favorite one. I think we've got a lot of opportunity with it moving forward.
As a guy who was camping this weekend and it took me like 35 minutes to make 2 cups of coffee very messily, I will be checking those out. That sounds awesome.
Oh, you have to send me your address. I can send you. We have an on-the-go kit specifically that includes the single serve pour over, but it's meant for camping.
Oh, nice. Cool. I definitely check that out. Who's the most interesting person you've met as a part of ECF? And ECF, our private community for store owners and professionals.
That's really good. I mean, there's a lot of interesting people there. And I think I'd be lying if I didn't say, trying to remember his name. I think it's Robert. I can't remember. He posts all the time. I've talked to him directly a few times related to email. I cannot remember his last name now. I'm never going to remember it. But we've had quite a few conversations. He just always seems to be so fiery. And he's always just in the know with things, which is pretty, I love being able to like see people who just like find out things before me, because it irritates me that I'm not like doing enough to pay more attention to stuff.
Are you talking about Jeremy Roberts? Are you talking about?
Jeremy Roberts. There it is. Yep, there it is. That's right. Yes. Jeremy Roberts.
Awesome. Jeremy's fantastic. Yeah, he's always in there. He's our SaaS community expert. And he pops up regularly in the nightmares of people who run SaaS agencies and can be highly counted on for asking how different SaaS acts. SaaS apps.
He had a challenge. He was talking about something with Klaviyo, and I was like, I don't think that's accurate, or I'm not sure. I disagree with him to some extent. And he was like, yeah, why don't you ask, you know, Jeremy Cohen from Klaviyo? And I know him because I did a presentation at Klaviyo, so I have a little bit of relationship with him. And I like asked him specifically the question, and then pasted it in there, kind of like asked him, you know, whatever. Like, just thought it was pretty funny. But he's always on top of it, and he's always good for a good debate, which I'd certainly appreciate.
It wouldn't be the same without Jeremy in there. He's been fantastic. And then finally, last question for you. What's the biggest problem you've solved, or the most valuable thing you've learned from another ECF member as being part of the community?
That's going to probably have to also go to Jeremy Roberts. What I was actually just talking about, he asked me to reach out to Jeremy Cohen about, was in relation to sending transactional emails. And he had recently posted something a couple of weeks ago about a company called Malomo, which allows you to send transactional emails directly through your ESP. And so I vetted them out, and actually we're getting ready to bring them on pretty soon here. So I would definitely say Jeremy again.
Very cool. And Jeremy, I'm going to have to reach out and get him something nice. Thank you, Jeremy. Well, Will, thank you for coming on, talking about this stuff, Amazon to newsletters, hacks to all of this stuff. It's an amazing brand that you've helped build over there. And yeah, and also being part of the community, you've been phenomenal in the forums and weighing in. And yeah, it's a pleasure to have you in there, and really, really fun to get to chat with you and kind of dig into everything you're doing over there at Death Wish on the podcast. So if you're listening, deathwishcoffee.com, check them out, order some brew. And Will, thank you so much.
Likewise, thank you so much. And I owe you a case study still, which I keep telling. It's like 80% done, but I just need to like allocate the 15 minutes to finish it up. I got to submit it. It's coming. I promise. Patrick,
I get to be the nice guy. I get to be the good cop, and he gets to be the bad cop. He's the one who, so for those of you that aren't part of the community, all of our new members, we ask to submit a case study to the forum. It's just a way that, one, it's a great way to kind of help keep interesting things flowing in the community. And all of our new members, we ask to do it. And then once you're a new member inside, you get to see how everyone else is, and kind of sets the tone for reciprocity, which is a huge value in the community. Patrick can be, he's pretty kind too. If he knows you're going after it, he'll give you a little extra time. So
yeah, he's great. I just feel so bad. I'm like, it's coming. And he's like, where's it at? I'm like, shit, gotta get it for him. Oh, he's great.
I'll message him here, try to get him off your back here, at least for a week or two. So Will, thank you.
I appreciate it.
It's fun, man. I appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, likewise, man. Really appreciate it.
That's going to do it for this week. Again, a big thank you to the team at Klaviyo for making the show possible. The best place to send highly segmented messages via email and SMS to your customers to make more money. You can learn more about them and get started at klaviyo.com/ECF. And also brought to you by the eCommerce Fuel Private Community, a vetted forum and review directory of 1,000+ in the trenches experienced store owners that you can connect with to help grow your business. If you want to learn more about that and apply for membership, you can do that at ecommercefuel.com. Thanks so much for listening. Work hard and adventure often, and looking forward to seeing you again next Friday.
The ASY Radio Network, live from New York.